Bill Cosby's days of chuckles and asking big questions like, why is there air? To outrageous laughter. Of being white America's favorite kindly black entertainer. Those days may be over. The rape allegations against him, which have been around since 2005, stories of strong drinks, passed out women, and forced sex are overwhelming Cosby's long career as a performer and his role as some kind of conscience figure in race-challenged America. Cosby's denials and determination to continue performing, even as his reputation sinks, has raised a new question, and it's not funny. Forget why is there air. How about why is there tolerance of rape and sexual abuse by celebrities, and we might include athletes in that category, given the discussions of the past few months. Here to talk about that is Jill Filipovich, attorney and political writer for Cosmopolitan.com. What are your thoughts on all of this? I mean, you were a fan of The Cosby Show growing up, right?
I was a fan of The Cosby Show, but I think that your intro was right, that we do tend to look the other way, especially when it's male celebrities, male athletes, you know, or men who, you know, whose work, whose art we admire.
And, you know, he took on this role as conscience of the black community when he, you know, went out against misogynist lyrics in hip hop music and, you know, that African-Americans have to be more educated and be better to succeed. And really railing against some of the more strident comments in the black community, and took a lot of criticism for that. You kind of have to wonder, how did he think of himself as a conscience when he knew all of this was going on, if the allegations are true?
Right. I mean, at the very least, he's an enormous hypocrite. Even if none of the allegations are true that he sexually assaulted these women, you know, which seems sort of unlikely given the volume of the accusations and the consistency of them, you know, but even if all he did was have consensual sex with these women, he's still an enormous hypocrite. I mean, he's married. He has been putting himself out there as this moral center and moral voice. He has very specifically criticized African-American women for having multiple sexual partners, children with many men, you know, and then he's out there, right, at the very, very least, cheating on his wife.
And, you know, Ta-Nehisi Coates, who's a great African-American young writer, who wrote a celebrated piece about Cosby back during this period when he was trying to be this sort of conscience of the black community, has now written a new piece all about these allegations. And it's so emotional here. Let me quote it a little bit. I've often thought about how those women, people in the allegations, and he knew about the allegations when he was reporting this piece, those women would have felt had they read my piece back in 2007 or 2008. The subject was morality, and yet one of the biggest accusations of immorality was left for a few sentences, was rendered invisible. I don't have many writing regrets, Ta-Nehisi Coates says, but this is one of them. I regret not saying what I thought of the accusations and then pursuing those thoughts. I regret it because the lack of pursuit puts me in league with people who either looked away or did not look hard enough. I take it as a personal admonition to always go there, to never flinch, and to never look away. What do you make of those powerful statements from a very trusted African-American writer?
I love that piece by Ta-Nehisi. I'm a fan of his generally, and I think he's on point that he and many other writers really didn't want to dig into this ugliest set of accusations. It feels very fraught. It feels like there's a lot of potential liability to be accusing a powerful man of assault.
He also spoke very candidly about, I was a young writer. I was living off of a freelance salary. I had a kid. I was writing about this big guy. It was my first big break. Boy, if I had taken this the wrong way and gotten him mad at me, it could have wrecked my whole career. He really cops to that, which shows you how much power someone like Cosby has, even among the journalists who might be willing to try to take him down.
Exactly. And, you know, Ta-Nehisi was a journalist and, you know, freelance, but one would assume had at least some backing from a large journalistic institution. You know, and you compare that to a lot of the women that were accusing Cosby of sexually assaulting or raping them. You know, these were women that were often very young, that were often very new in their industry, and that were often brought to Cosby by their own agents or people who they trusted. You know, so who were they supposed to go to and who would have believed them? What were these women supposed to do?
Is there something about men who get this kind of power who feel a certain entitlement? Is it something on the male side that's also driving this as well?
I think that might be part of it. You know, I do think it's important to emphasize that most men, no matter how powerful they are not rapists or
exactly.
sexual predators.
Yes.
What we do.
Glad to hear you say that.
What we do know, you know, from people that have studied these things is that men who are sexually predatory tend to have many, many victims. And they tend to be enabled by communities that either look the other way or that prop up the kind of sexist myths that allow them to feel like they can continue acting the way they do. So, you know, I think we really need to change the culture around this stuff and then target, you know, the handful of very sadistic men who commit these acts.
Well, like athletes who lose their endorsements, Cosby is losing projects, losing investments on the part of media operations. He's still performing. He'll be performing this weekend, if I'm not mistaken. Has your view of Bill Cosby changed as a result of all this?
It has. I mean, I wouldn't imagine that there's anyone in America who hasn't at least, you know, thought twice about Bill Cosby. However, they, you know, however people come down on how they feel about him, I think that this story is important because it does sort of push us to examine whether there are heroes or people that we like, you know, and realize that no matter how much we like someone's TV show or their music or how well they play on the field, we have to make an assessment of how much does their actual life and their choices as human beings and the way that they treat other human beings, how much should that impact our consumption of the things that they make or, you know, the sport that they play? How much should we be giving our resources and our money to people, you know, who behave very, very badly when they're off camera or off the field?
You know, by that argument, did Bill Clinton get away with it?
I think if the Clinton Lewinsky situation were happening today, we would have a very different conversation about it. You know, I think especially with kind of the rise of the feminist internet and a much more sophisticated understanding of power differentials, you know, in things like sexual harassment, you know, I don't think that we'd be turning, I would hope that we wouldn't be turning Monica Lewinsky into a national joke, that, you know, we would take seriously the fact that she was, what, 20 years old? I mean, she was a kid, you know, and here was one of the most powerful men, arguably the most powerful man in the world, you know, and that it wouldn't have sort of been brushed off as a series of jokes about, you know, a cigar and a blue dress.
Jill Filipovich is an attorney and political writer for Cosmopolitan.com. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.